You're listening to the free edition of Sweden in Focus from The Local. If you would like to listen to a full-length version of the podcast, as well as an additional midweek episode, please check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade to Membership Plus. Here's this week's free edition.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Sweden in Focus, the Local's weekly news podcast. We're recording this episode on Thursday, the 7th of December, and this week we'll chat about Gävle's famous Christmas goat, which may or may not go up in flames this year. We'll discuss a leaked Russian intelligence report allegedly aimed at stirring tensions in Sweden. We'll look at plans the Social Democrats are hatching as they seek to return to power. We'll examine calls for tougher checks on permanent residency permits. We'll talk about major new staff cuts at Spotify and what they mean for workers in Sweden, as well as related issues of what Sweden is doing to attract and retain international workers. In fact, we'll spend a good chunk of this episode getting insights about moving to and integrating in Sweden from our special guest today, Maria Fogelström-Schylberg, CEO of Stockholm Academic Forum, which, among other things, runs a special network designed to help the accompanying partners of migrant workers get settled in Sweden. I'm your host, Paul O'Mahony, and I'm joined from Malmö by Richard Orange. And with me here in Stockholm are James Savage and the aforementioned Maria Fogelström-Schylberg. Welcome to the podcast, Maria.
Thank you.
Can you please tell listeners a little bit about yourself and your work?
I'm the CEO of the Stockholm Academic Forum, which is a cooperation between all 18 universities and colleges, university colleges in Stockholm, mm-hmm. together with the city of Stockholm.
Right.
So our main aim is to show Stockholm as we normally say, an excellent academic destination to attract students and scholars.
And you also work with the Stockholm Dual Career Network, which is part of the...
Exactly. That's one of our what we work the most with now. It started 8 years ago. It's difficult to attract people to move here because our universities are state-owned, most of them.
Yeah.
And to attract really good researchers, it's a big competition from all the rest of the world,
right.
Actually. So finally, when they got here, many of them left too early because the partner or the family never managed to settle down. So we had to take care of this and do something about this problem to take care of the accompanying partners. So we started the Stockholm Dual Career Network to help them into the job market.
Great. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. How are things with you in Malmö, Richard?
Great. We got the first of our two Christmas parties for the Local this evening. So I'm looking forward to that. We're going over to Copenhagen. They do a big do in the International Press Centre there, which is
nice.
Amazing. Like the Danish Christmas is really full on, actually. It's a lot of different things.
And then you're having another one.
Yeah, we had a misunderstanding. We had a slight misunderstanding because we thought it wasn't happening. So we booked this and then Dushan got in touch, who's the head of IT. And he said, yeah, when are we having our Christmas party? And we were like, we actually booked one without you. But he can't come because it's the International Press Centre in Copenhagen.
So it's only journalists.
Oh. Yeah. So we can't just... drag in the sort of rest of the team.
It takes more than journalists to make a news publication. So
it does. It does. We probably could have squeezed them in. Yeah, we probably should have. But anyway, it
doesn't
matter.
Next year.
Yeah.
How are things with you, James?
Things are good with me. I also have two Christmas parties next week, so that'll be fun. It's Christmas party season, and I'm hoping that this snow will somehow stay around. Looks like it's going to melt, though. Very sad about that.
We'll see. Let's stick with Christmas and talk about the famous Christmas goat in Gävle. So the idea is that this giant straw goat is erected every year and you're supposed to try to burn it down. Is that correct, Richard?
No, it's absolutely not correct. You're absolutely not supposed to burn it down. That is illegal. Okay. And it's an imprisonable crime.
I'll stop trying.
But actually you sort of are supposed to. And that's kind of why it's so famous. Otherwise it would just be a kind of sort of slightly lame. Well, otherwise it wouldn't have got anything like the attention, because what happened is on, I think, the third year of its existence, it was burnt down, and then it was burnt down year after year after year. And it became a kind of tradition, and nobody really knows who burns it down or how that's organized or whether it's just one off people. But for the first sort of 20 years, it burnt down a lot more often than it survived till New Year's Eve. But then in the last 5 years, it survived, I think, 5 years in a row. And then it got burnt down in 2021. And then it survived last year. So it sort of happens every year. But the idea that this is a tradition and something that's kind of a bit of fun is not true. And there was this famous story from a few years back where this 51-year-old American got jailed for like 20 years. And he told the court that his
18 days.
Did I say 18 years? Yeah, he got jailed for 18 days, sorry. But what was funniest was in the court, he was like, said that his Swedish friends had convinced him that this was just a bit of fun and that he was supposed to burn it down, and provided him with all of the tools to do so, and then like pushed him off in the direction of the goat. But no, you're not supposed to burn it down, but it's always quite fun to see if it survives. And I've been reporting, like, I think must be at least 10 years I've reported on this, and I still find it kind of amusing. So it's a good, it's, yeah. I think it's a great story.
All right. Well, thanks for filling us in on the Gävle goat, and we'll add links in the show notes for anyone interested in finding out more. Okay, on to more serious news now. We're just going to run through a few of this week's main stories quite briefly because we want to get into the conversation with Maria. But let's start with this story about a Russian intelligence report and how it relates to the unrest in Sweden that came in the wake of anti-Islam protests. Can you fill us in on this, James?
Right. This was a story from Finnish public broadcaster YLE, or Yle, as it's pronounced in Swedish, which was quoting the Dossier Center, a Russian investigative news site. Now, they said that they had seen two leaked memos from a Russian intelligence agency from late 2022 that were leaked by an intelligence officer, they said. These memos include suggestions that Russia should burn copies of the Quran in Sweden in order to disrupt Swedish relations with Turkey and thereby to complicate Sweden's NATO application. Now, as most listeners will know, there were subsequently a number of Quran burnings, including by people with links to Russia, which indeed had the effect of damaging relations with Turkey and delaying Sweden's entry into NATO. Now, the Dossier Center says that it has no direct evidence of Russian involvement in these Quran burnings. All they have is these documents that said that this was what Russia was planning to do.
Right.
And Sweden's foreign minister, Tobias Billström, would not comment specifically on any of the claims in Yle's report, but he pointed out that it's well known that Russia does not want Sweden to be a member of NATO. So I think these reports have, in some people's minds, confirmed what a lot of people suspected. But there's, as of now, no absolute confirmation that any of these Quran burnings were instigated by Russia. But very interesting report nonetheless.
Okay, thanks, James. And we do have a news report about this on the site that we'll link to in the notes. We'll move on to politics now, and the left-wing Social Democrats, Sweden's biggest party, has released a series of reports that are set to pave the way for a policy overhaul. You wrote about this in your weekly column, Richard, which we'll link to in the notes. What are the most important things to know about how the former Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson and her party are thinking?
Well, I think what's most striking is just how critical they are of how Sweden, and by extension, their own party, the Social Democrats, have handled immigration and integration over the past 20 years. I mean, Lavan Riddar, Social Democrat MP, who herself is of Kurdish origin, she said, "I think we should be deeply self-critical," talking about the Social Democrats, in a interview with Aftonbladet about the report. And in the report, it sort of goes on about just the scale of immigration that there has been in Sweden over the past 30 years, which it paints in very stark numerical terms as a sort of chart of the numbers, and compares and sort of stresses that no other country has really had so much immigration in such a short amount of time. And then it also is very critical of the extent to which society has come in to help those people who've arrived integrate. So it says, out of fear of stigmatizing people
Reardon writes in the report, society has not been willing to admit that certain groups need extra support and targeted measures, which is worse than these groups' chances of integrating. And she specifically points to people from African countries which don't have functioning education systems. So you have a lot of people who have trouble even writing. It's very hard for them to get into the Swedish labour market. And it's similar with the report on gang crime, which explicitly links the problem with gang crime to past immigration policy and failures of integration policy, which is quite a big step for the Social Democrats, because they've in the past tended to have a class-based analysis. They're saying, you know, it's not where these people come from. It's the fact that they are deprived and don't have the same resources as people in the rest of society. And again, Teresa Cavallo, who led that report, in that report, it says, one reason we didn't get this issue right is probably to do with the fact that the Sweden Democrats' arrival in the parliament led to us as a party in our rush to distance ourselves from the Sweden Democrats to temporarily lack our own analysis. So I think it's really interesting that they've done this. And what's weird about these reports is that they don't come up with any policy proposals. They're just analyses. And the policy proposals are supposed to come within a year or so, sometime next year. And what's interesting about that is it's hard to see where they're going on it, because it seems to be bedding the way for quite a much stricter immigration policy and also a much more interventionist integration policy. But it's just unclear whether the Social Democrats are willing to go that far, because in her year as PM, Magdalena Andersson repeatedly said she would turn over every stone to fight failed integration. And I didn't see any really, really far-going policies that they came out with in that period. So it'd be interesting to see where this goes. And there's been a lot of criticism from within the Social Democrats, from in the Swedish left, to some of the things that they've said in these reports and the direction that they seem to be pushing.
Yeah, and we'll come back to this when they do come back with more concrete policy proposals. We also wrote this week about the Swedish National Audit Office calling for a clampdown on permanent residency permit holders who no longer qualify to keep their permits. How much of a problem is this, according to the audit office, and what does it want to be done about it?
Well, they said it had come at a cost. They estimated that people who'd left the country had received, I think, 430 million kroner in undeserved welfare benefits between 2013 and 2020, which is actually not a huge cost, really. But what they said is that they had found 13,000 cases in 2020 when they checked where there were strong reasons to investigate whether the person was living up to the requirements of their residency permits, of which I think 9,000 people had kept their permanent residency despite having left Sweden, which means that they can carry on maybe getting benefits while they're living in, I don't know, another country. And they said that I think 1 in 10 people with a work permit had no registered income, and 1 in 4 people with a residency permit for higher education was not registered as studying anywhere. So that's, you know, pretty big failure. What I found a bit weird was that in the press release, they made out that nothing had been done about this. But actually, in 2020, the Migration Agency ran this huge project, which is in the report they talk about, where they checked all the people with permanent residency against the people who've left Sweden. And that meant that 12,000 permanent residencies were recalled in 2020 and 14,000 in 2021, which is actually a lot more than the under 10,000, which will be recalled right now, this year, when the government has made this a big focus. So I felt that it kind of missed out. They didn't draw attention to the fact that work had already been started to remedy this. And also the fact that over this period, there was the refugee crisis. I mean, they had a lot of other things to be to be dealing with in the Migration Agency.
Yeah, we have an article about this on the site that, again, we'll link to in the notes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
It's- Now on to Spotify, which is one of the biggest stories in this week, and certainly one that will affect many of our listeners. So Spotify announced that it was laying off 17% of its employees. What can you tell us about this, James? Why is Spotify making these cutbacks, and what kind of reaction are you seeing to the news?
Well, the way Daniel Ek, who's CEO of Spotify, puts it, he says the company is trying to right-size its costs. What it says is the more difficult economic environment, economic slowdown that we're seeing, but also the cost of capital, that's to say rising interest rates, mean that the company has to do this. So effectively, the company had borrowed significantly to invest in the growth of products like podcasts. Mm. But now the cost of servicing debts has increased and economic growth in general has taken a hit. But some people were surprised by this because Spotify had just posted a profit for the third quarter, which is something of a rarity for Spotify. So things seem to be going in the right direction. And 17% of the workforce is a lot of people. It's about 1,500 people worldwide. So obviously this has created a lot of concern among people affected, not least those whose work permits are dependent on their employment. And Spotify has said that it will be working with people, particularly those whose work permits are dependent on their employment, to try and help them find solutions. But clearly that's going to be a worry for a lot of people.
Can I bring you in here, Maria? Do this week's Spotify layoffs have repercussions for your members at the Stockholm Dual Career Network?
We don't know yet. We haven't heard anything specific from any members, but of course it can happen. What we know, which is positive for us since Spotify is one of our members, so they pay an annual fee to take part of our network, and they just gave us a thumbs up for next year. So they are still prioritizing these people coming here with a partner.
Right.
So of course that could be individuals who are affected, but they still take very good care of those people coming here. Mm. So we're happy for that.
So if your members are affected by this, then what happens if the partner with a job gets laid off?
You mean with their accompanying partner?
Yeah, exactly.
I think we would take discussions from case to case about that. We don't throw anyone out. And hopefully some of their partners already get a job too, so they can save the one who got laid off. We never throw anyone out. So we will still take care of them.
You won't, but there's always a danger that Sweden might. That's the concern.
Of course, yes. We haven't talked about it yet. It's so recent. We haven't heard anything from the people we work with yet. But it's of course it can of course be a problem and difficult situation for people.
And if we talk more generally, what are the main issues faced by the accompanying partners of people who move to Sweden for work?
Well, the main issue is, of course, finding a job. We know that among our members, they are very highly educated. So we have like 96, 97% have a university education, at least a bachelor. So, and they have, we know that something like 85% have left a career in the home country. Mm. So they come here and, of course, want quickly to get a job. So that's the main problem. That's the biggest issue. And after that, we know that one other really big thing is loneliness, depression, of the fact that you suddenly come to a country where you are nobody, you know nobody, you have no networks, you don't know where to start. So these, I think these mental or psychological problems, we have understood that this is maybe the biggest issue. Mm. To just, you don't know the language, don't know anything, especially if you come from third countries, it can be completely different to everything you ever have seen before. So we think the social part is really, really important. You come with a high education, good CV, good work experience, they will find jobs because most of them do. But in the beginning to feel this isolation, maybe don't know where to start. That's the biggest issue.
That's interesting. I think that's something that we see, James, in a lot of the countries where we operate. It's not just in Sweden. It's just, it's an issue for people moving to a new country, mental health issues over and over.
Yeah. They really are. And I think, you know, this worry about not finding a job, not necessarily for financial reasons, sometimes for financial reasons, but also just for this wanting to have a purpose in life, wanting to have something that's, so you're not just an appendage to your partner. And I think this is one of the things that worries me with the state of the economy right now, where we're seeing more people being laid off at places like Spotify. We've seen it at Klarna. We've seen it at lots of other companies in Sweden and in many other countries that the local works in. And I think if this is going to, I guess the concern is this is going to make it harder for people who are in this situation to find work.
I think so. From my former work, we know that that was a region in Sweden that they had very high level of unemployment. And this like a generation, a couple of years away from the job market for a couple of years, then they come next generation to take these places because they are younger, they're cheaper, they are more recently educated. So it's so important to get a job, to do something. I think today's life in most parts of the world, it's based on that two in a couple are working. So the former expat situation doesn't really exist anymore. And everything is so much focused on your professional life. It shows who you are as a person and you study for it and you want to work with it. So it's so important.
Yeah, because if we look back maybe 20, 30, 40 years, and if you were expatriated, you would get a big package. Someone would sort out your home. Someone would give you extra money and someone took care of the house and that's not really the case for most people who find work abroad nowadays.
No, I have hardly met a single one who has that situation anymore. So you come as a couple and both want to work. So it's really important to quickly get to the job market. In Sweden, normally it takes a year to get a job here, even for Swedes.
How does the dual career network work? I mean, what do you do for these accompanying partners?
I'm so proud because we started this year an academy because before we had open sessions all the time with different job-related workshops to help people to get into the job market. But we found out it was the question about the social life and the depression and the problem of feeling alone. Mm. So we knew that if we kept people in a group, it was much better for them to feel confident and to meet the same people, to at the same time get friends as you look for jobs. Mm. So we started the Academy, which is a 5-week program. It's called Unlocking Sweden. And we don't start, at least in Sweden, they're always very practical and you should be useful. So you start by learning how to write a CV in Sweden. But there are many steps before you get to that. Mm. So what we do is the first week is only concentrated on history of different kinds of Sweden. Swedish history, Swedish art history, Swedish industrial history, geography, to have a good knowledge about which country you have come to, what is here, what are the rules, how do people behave. We talk about mental health. We work with psychologists, with personal coaches to help them understand that they still are the same persons, even if they have changed country. So you can build up your self-consciousness and feel confident about yourself that everything will be fine here. Mm. We teach them everything about how the Swedish job market looks like, what kind of companies we have, what ways forward you have if you want to switch career. And that we also, of course, work with CV workshops and how to create your LinkedIn profile, teach them networking, which is the key to everything in Sweden.
Yeah.
And at the end, we have a recruitment event where they speed date with recruiters and some companies.
What kind of results do you see from that?
Oh, we have now, we have the last cohort going on now, ends next week. And when the year's over, we have had 80 people examined from this academy. And we can see from the first groups from winter and spring, many, many of them are already having jobs. So we can see we think it's a really good concept.
Fantastic.
Makes us happy.
And Sweden's government is in the process of what it calls its paradigm shift on migration. At the start of November, for example, the salary threshold to qualify for a work permit doubled, and the government is applying the rules retroactively to people already in the country. So how are changes to migration rules affecting members of the Stockholm Dual Career Network?
We can say that most of our members have partners working in universities. Researchers are exception from this rule, so we are a bit lucky in that way. But of course, people are worried. It's a big change. The level is, of course, it's almost doubled from before. And it will be difficult, that's for sure, and worrying. And you cannot maybe not bring your partner from the beginning. We haven't seen it yet. It's also very recent, but the feeling is that it's worrying, of course. A bit happy, though, that the universities are exceptions. But I read yesterday about the UK will do something similar
Yes.
It was even worse, I think.
Yes, it was a very high threshold to bring a partner into the country.
Yeah, a very expensive to apply for permit, residence permit.
A residence permit. Yeah. Well, I think this is the thing. I mean, what's happening in Sweden is reflective of what's happening in so many parts of Europe and the world. It's, you know, the barriers are going up, which is, I think, a concern. It's a concern for people who are, you know, mobile citizens. It's also a concern for companies who need expert labor, who need skilled people to work for them, and who are working in an international environment. If you're Spotify or if you're Klarna, okay, Spotify's laying people off right now, but it's still going to need to recruit people in the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, and even if you're a smaller company like the local, you know, you need to recruit people from other countries sometimes. And it's a real barrier to growth.
Yes.
If governments just put up the barriers all the time.
Yes, I think so. And I know I have a past in working in the European Union, and I know that all regions in Europe need to import workforce. Mm. Not one single region is growing by normal nativity. So we need people coming in. And if they only put up barriers, it's really, really bad. I think it's going dangerous development, I must say.
Mm. It's kind of related to that. Sweden's migration minister, Maria Malmer Stenergard, has said that she wants Sweden to be more competitive in attracting people to the labour market who possess skills that Sweden needs. And the migration agency is close to launching a new work permit model that it claims will speed up waiting times. I mean, from your perspective, do you think Sweden is doing enough to attract highly skilled international workers?
Yeah, I've been working with this for many years. You talk about talent attraction to attract the best people coming here. Yes, I think they do work with talent attraction, but they don't work with talent retention, which is more important almost to take care of the people who are already here. For a company or an organization who employs an international person here, it's a high cost, of course. Yeah. You have to move someone here. You have to make them start the job, understand the job. And it takes half a year before you start to bring in something to your company. And if the people leave, not only because the partner home is not feeling well or doesn't find a job, it's so expensive. It's so really bad. So I think maybe talent attraction, yes, they do quite well, but they forget about the retention. And that's even more important.
Mm.
Because when people finally come here, you have to keep them. We can't lose people going they settle down and suddenly it doesn't work and then they leave. That's really bad, I think. And
if you were Prime Minister of Sweden,
yeah,
what would you do to improve talent retention?
Oh, I think we need to see numbers. People don't understand how much money it is in this. If you compare an unemployed person here using the Swedish system, as to say, compared to when they start to work and bringing in some tax money, it's really on a low level of salary. It gets so much money to the state and to the municipalities when they start to work.
Yeah.
And I think we need to see those numbers, not only see it as a problem, but actually what does it mean when people work? So I would like to see a report about that.
Yeah. What show how valuable labour migration is to Sweden.
Oh, yes. Some sectors wouldn't survive without international people, that's for sure.
And as you said, you've been working with these issues for years. It must be really interesting working with so many people who are completely new to Sweden. I mean, do you find that you learn new things about your own country from speaking to the participants in your programmes?
Oh, yes. We learn so much. It's a luxury to meet all these people who's highly talented, and we learn so much from them. And I think a big problem is that in Sweden, maybe in other countries too, it's that people who recruit, they don't really know, they don't understand what does it mean to have been an exam from a certain university in India, for example, because it's not famous. They know about Cambridge or Stanford, but they don't know about international universities or educations. And that's a problem, I think. This, I wouldn't say ignorance, but not enough knowledge about how the world looks like. So, and also, of course, the discrimination with specific names. We can see that it's much easier for Europeans to get a job here than if you come from a third country, that's for sure, even though they have many times as good educations and experiences as Europeans. But maybe that's human, I don't know. But it's something we have to fight a lot for, to support these people, to push them and recommend them. And it's much more hands-on work from our side to maybe call a company, say, we have a really good candidate here. She's from India. Please look at her CV. So we have to teach recruitment companies and also HR departments about how the world outside Sweden looks like.
Mm.
Some companies are really good at this, of course, but it has to be more spread.
Do you see tendencies that, you know, some sectors are more open to foreign talent than others?
Oh, yes.
Which ones are good? And if you were going to say which ones are good at this and which ones are bad?
I think tech sector is really good.
Yeah, you'd expect, I guess. That's
because they can't find workforce, they have to import people because we don't have enough Swedes.
Mm.
Bad conservative, I would say, is bank finance sector. It's very often, it's difficult to get in to a bank, have a bank job. I think many people in Sweden, when you start to work in a bank, you start at a really low level and then you raise internally. And also another really difficult thing in Sweden is that we don't have these kind of junior jobs. You're immediately a project manager. We don't have these first line jobs where you normally easily can get in. Because when international people come here, they feel maybe they don't know the Swedish language. So they don't want to apply for jobs at their right level. So they want to start on a lower level to get in. But actually, we don't have that kind of jobs, assistant jobs or secretaries. So it's quite high level. And then that's of course, puts up a difficulty to get in there. A group that has really big problems here is all the regulated occupations, because it takes long time to come as a nurse or a doctor. Yeah. It would be so good if that could be a quicker process, because it's people who really are needed here.
Mm.
And it's frustrating for them to wait so long.
Yeah, so they need to get their qualifications certified quicker in Sweden.
Yeah, like psychologists or nurses or doctors.
It
breaks my heart meeting, especially people from sort of Arab countries who have studied at a very high level in a subject that is hard to get work in Sweden. You know, and you just end up driving a bus. It's so
That's a waste.
It's such a waste of human capital.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
We've had quite a lot of people sort of contacting us in the last few months. I think, you know, reading reader stories about and this was including some of these people who are going to lose their residency in Sweden because of the increase in the income requirement. And a lot of these people who talk to us, they're extremely highly qualified. They're not working in extremely highly qualified jobs right now, but they are extremely highly qualified. They are, you know, they are like Richard was saying, you know, doctors, nurses. And what a lot of people are hoping is that they work a few years driving a bus or whatever it is, and then once their Swedish is up to scratch, once they've managed to go through all their studies, that they will be able to go back to the profession that they started in.
Yeah.
And they've put in so much effort and so much personal investment, and thanks to the income requirement, for many of them, it's going to have gone to waste. And it's gone to waste for Sweden too. That's what's so sad.
Yeah, I talked to a friend of mine. She's Lebanese and she's an interior architect. And when she came here with her husband, who's Swedish, it's like maybe 20 years ago, the first year she didn't have a job. So she worked she had internships with companies. And she said that was the way of getting a job.
Mm.
But she wouldn't be let in today.
No.
So of course it's not good.
No, it's sad. It's very sad.
What do your members find most surprising when they move here?
I think one thing is that so very few jobs are advertised. You don't have any job ads. Everything goes through networks and contacts. Many don't. They haven't yet a LinkedIn profile. Very many jobs in Sweden they find you rather than you find them.
Mm.
Mm.
And also, of course, the flat organizations is very surprising for many people. They have been through all the interviews with everyone. And at the end interview is actually with colleagues. And finally, it's the colleagues who decide if you are a nice chap or not.
Yeah.
So the social thing is very important here. You can come with a top CV, best CV, best recommendations.
Mm.
But if your future colleagues don't think you are nice enough, you won't get the job.
Can that be a hidden source of discrimination as well? Because you think the colleagues are interviewing you to find out whether you're going to get on with them on a social level. And if you've come from a different culture...
Yeah.
And you're forcing them to speak English rather than Swedish, for example. Might it be that the colleagues, even subconsciously, are thinking, actually, no, we prefer that other guy. We preferred Kalle, the Swedish guy, because, you know, we could joke with him and we had the same cultural references and everything. Isn't that a risk?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And also very difficult. If you don't know Swedish culture, how could you behave like a Swede? So that's part of what we teach in the academy, how Swedish business culture work and how Swedes behave and why. Mm. So that's important to understand, because people can't understand that I had everything they asked for, but I didn't get the job after the last interview. Mm. So
how to go into the colleague interview and behave like a Swede?
Yeah, I don't really, it's so difficult because I'm a Swede. Don't cut someone when they're speaking. Don't talk too much about yourself. Like the Jantelagen, you know, you shouldn't think that you are someone. Be quite humble, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Don't boast. Terrible thing.
How was it for you when you came here?
I have to say, I've only done one job interview in Sweden. And it was cool. Mm-hmm. I think it was always about finding what I had in common with the person sitting at the other side of the table.
Yeah.
It was trying to find those points of commonality. And I was lucky. I was just so lucky. Yeah. Because the person that was interviewing me, we talked a little bit about our background. And it turned out that she was completely Swedish, but she had for 2 years lived in the town in England where I grew up. Oh. And then, of course, that was just luck. It was just a stroke of luck. It's like, oh, you know, we had that point of contact. But maybe you can find that point of contact with something else. Maybe it's, you know, a hobby or an interest or a film or I don't know.
Sure. I think Swedes generally like people who are like they are. Mm. So to find common things, that's a good tip.
Yeah.
And also to tell about you. Many Swedes are curious to know about you. Why did you come here? Not just to talk job.
Yeah.
I think that's a bit surprising for people sometimes, that you don't only talk about your merits. It's not seen very positive if you tell that I can deliver 200%. That's scarce, Swedes. Yeah. You don't say that because that's not what they want. It's a work-life balance here that is important. That's maybe a bit unusual. If you come from completely other culture.
And I think if you've just come to Sweden, I think Swedes do love talking about Sweden. They do love hearing about what foreigners think about Sweden. Generally nice things. So if you've got something nice to say about Sweden, something that surprised you since you've arrived, even if you haven't been here very long, sort of share it, because it will give them a sense of, at least it's something that they can relate to and might be interested in.
And also tell them why you came.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came here with my wife. We came from India because she got a job in Karolinska Institutet. So we came here with our two children, because Swedes are quite shy. They wouldn't ask that. But they are very curious to know. So I think that's a good tip. I say, always tell where you come from and why you came here. That's a good opening thing. Yeah. But in general, we can see among our members that Sweden is still a dream country for them. They love to be here. They want to stay here. And compared to many other places in the world, Sweden is still very, very good. So I think it's easy to talk about only negative things. We can see, depending on where they come from, this is heaven.
That's it for this week. Please share the podcast with a friend if you think they'd enjoy it, or leave a review if you can. Anything you do to spread the word is very much appreciated. Our panelists today were James Savage and Richard Orange. Our guest was Maria Fogelström-Schulberg, who also presents a podcast called Stockholm is a State of Minds, which you can listen to wherever you find podcasts. And thanks for joining us, Maria. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. I'm Paul O'Mahony, and we'll be back again next week. Until then, take care.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
That's all for this week's free edition of Sweden in Focus. If you'd like to hear a full-length version of the podcast each week, as well as an additional midweek episode with more interviews and analysis, please upgrade to Membership Plus. Make sure to check the episode notes for details on how to upgrade. Sweden in Focus is a podcast by The Local Europe. Our sound engineer is Rhys Edwards. The publisher is James Savage.